Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Ryan Beckenhauer, and you are listening to the Boulder Business Podcast. In today's episode, we're going to go over a financial statement called the Profit and Loss Statement. Sometimes it's called a P&L. Sometimes it's called an income statement. We're going to go over why it's called a profit and loss, how it's structured, and then ways we can use it for overall business strategy and operations. So let's get right into it. So why is it called a profit and loss? Well, because you can either turn a profit or you can turn a loss. And that's going to all depend on that bottom line number. So a lot of times on Wall Street, you'll hear top line growth, bottom line growth. That's going to come from the P&L statement. Top line growth is going to be year over year revenue growth. Bottom line growth is going to be year over year net income growth or net operating income. So let's dive right into this bad boy. So on the top line, like I mentioned, we're going to have our revenues. Sometimes they're broken down depending on the revenue stream that it comes from. That number is going to be our first key measure. So it's great to measure all these numbers year over year or measure them to your peers of the same size and the same age and the same geographic location of your business. The next is going to be COGS, which is cost of goods sold or cost of sales, kind of depending on the industry you're in. COGS, cost of goods sold, is typically manufacturers, wholesalers, ag. Cost of sales is typically service providers. You know, they don't have the inventory that cost of goods sold typically is made up of. So cost of goods sold, that is going to be the expense directly tied to your product or service. So for example, let's take an auto manufacturer. The people putting the car together on the assembly line, that labor, because it's directly tied to making that product, that's going to go into COGS or cost of goods sold. Whereas maybe the salesman in the showroom, that's going to go under expenses as payroll. So it's a little bit different. So just something to look out for. Now that's going to come to our second key measure. Now we're going to get to our second important number, which is gross profit. And again, we want to measure ourselves year over year, or we want to compare it to our peers to see how we're doing. To go back up to COGS, one thing about COGS is, again, you want to compare that to yourself to see maybe if your negotiating skills are getting better with your suppliers, or it could be an external factor, let's say Chinese import tariffs. So it may not be your fault that COGS is going up, but it's definitely something to keep track of and make sure your margins are profitable at the end of the day. So we get back to gross profit. That's going to be the difference between your total revenues or net sales. Net sales is revenues minus returns, allowances, and discounts minus the cost to make those goods is going to be your gross profit. Then we're going to have all the other different expenses. So whether it's advertising, bank service charge, credit card fees, software support for your computer systems, life insurances, janitorial expenses, meals and entertainment, any other expenses, payroll, professional service fees, marketing, office expenses, supplies, taxes, meals and travel, utilities, all those are going to go under your expenses. So your gross profit minus expenses is going to bring us to our net income. And as we all know, I mentioned it before, that's going to be our bottom line. So when you hear someone referencing the bottom line, they're referencing their net income. Net income is a very important number, but net income doesn't always tell the whole story. So as a, you know, from a lender's perspective, net income, so we look at 3 years of financials for anything over $250,000. And if we see the net income drop a lot, we're going to want to hear the story behind it. And sometimes it's just an accounting thing. So let's say you took a Section 179, which is a big depreciation. So it's a way to kind of limit that tax liability. But remember, don't limit your tax liability too much because then you may not be able to qualify for a loan. So it's very important where I've seen companies that top line is 7 to 8 million, bottom line is 20,000. Now, if those are your margins, those are slivers of margins. But oftentimes, as people want to reduce their tax liability so much that it will cost them in the end because that's what we go off of, right? We're going to use free cash flow, which is EBITDA or EBITDA, which is earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, amortization. And that E word, that is going to be your net income. So it's very important that you have that conversation with your accountant prior to doing your taxes. Because yeah, if you can find that sweet spot of qualifying for your loan or any lending that you may need to expand your business or improve operations, and also to reduce your tax liability to as low as possible, that is going to be the sweet spot. And now that we got that out of the way, I'm going to try to tie in episode one on Balance Sheet 101. We're going to talk about some asset management ratios. Some of those ratios include day sales in inventory, day sales outstanding, and days payable outstanding. All of those particular formulas are going to help us figure out our cash cycle. And I'll let you know why the cash cycle is so important right after I explain these three ratios and how they come about. So there's four landmark times in a cash cycle. And this is not for every business, but just in general, when your raw materials are purchased on credit, when cash is paid to your vendors or your AP, your finished goods are sold on credit to your clients, which creates AR or accounts receivables. And then, of course, when the cash is received by you from your clients. So days sales and inventory, that's going to be from when you purchase the raw materials on credit until the time you sell those finished goods on credit to your clients. It's going to be the number of days that that takes. And again, when you compare it year over year, that's going to be a metric you want to look at. You know, why is your inventory taking longer year over year? Or if it's taking shorter, why? Have you got more efficient? What is the reason behind that? So a lot of times it's, yeah, know your numbers. As a business owner, you're going to hear me say this over and over and over. If you don't know your numbers, you don't know your business. So that brings us to DSO, and that's going to be from the time where the finished goods are sold to your clients on credit until your cash is received. So pretty much the amount of time it takes for you to collect your AR or accounts receivables. And then the last ratio that we'll discuss is our days payable outstanding. And that is from the time the raw materials are purchased on credit until you actually pay your vendors, which is your AP. So the relationship between those is what's called your cash cycle. And the cash cycle is defined by your day sales inventory plus your day sales outstanding minus your days payable outstanding. And the reason why that's such an important formula is because the longer your cash cycle, the longer you're using your cash. The shorter your cash cycle, the shorter amount of time you're using your cash. And I think I mentioned it before, is it's so important to reach out to your supplier and see if they're willing to extend that period. Because if you could use supplier credit or what they call trade credit, that's going to create cash within your cash cycle. And that cash typically doesn't cost any money. So you're not paying interest on a bank line of credit. You're not trying to finance it through credit cards and things like that. So it's a great business tactic, and it really shows that the business owner really understands the ins and outs of their particular business. So on that note, if you guys have any additional questions, please post them in the comments. Again, if you know anybody that you think should be on the Boulder Business Podcast, any particular businesses that you're very fond of, or just anybody in the community that's doing a really great job, I want them to hear about the podcast. I want to have them on the podcast. And any way I can create value for you guys, I want to. This is Ryan Beckenhauer signing off for the Boulder Business Podcast. Take care.